Lincoln Auto!
This is Brock and Salk.
Brock Huard is my hero.
What Brock Huard says?
No, he's not a friend of mine.
Subscribe to receive every episode at Apple Podcasts or on Google Podcasts.
Ah, we stink, man.
Now, here are your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
No way!
Yeah, here we go with another Brock and Salk podcast. Is this a first for us? Have we ever done a show where neither of us are there?
Oh, yeah. Triangulated?
We have?
Sure.
We've done this?
I think so.
Show or a podcast?
We definitely haven't done it as a pod.
No.
We didn't even say podcast.
I feel like I like was in Bristol and maybe you were...
I don't know.
In Arizona, the Bay Area. We've had some triangulated relationships in the past, but yeah, that's the first time on the podcast in a year and a half.
Sketchy.
Well, I thought you just meant like me, you, and Danny. That's sort of our triangulated relationship, right? That we always talk about. Oh, that's a triangle. Sorry. Yeah. The vicious love triangle of Bonneville, Seattle, 710 ESPN. So, yeah. Well, so a lot to get to today, Brock, obviously. We'll do some Mariners conversation, but it's two. You reminded me we're 2 days away here as we record from the NFL draft, and it's. I will say that this draft feels unlike any that I can remember. I mean, it's almost like wait, but not the real draft, right? Because the Seahawks are like bit players in this thing, and it just doesn't feel normal at all.
You don't think we're going to be hosting Thursday? Did you not get the note? Like, we got to fly back. We're going to host the event center. We're going to have 30,000 fans there, bro. We're going to be sitting up there, pumping them up, getting ready for the balloons to fall trade. And then we're going to pump them up, and we're going to get ready for the next pick in that first round trades. And we're going to leave the first round event center with nobody getting drafted. And every one of the fans like, whew, that was weird. Go to the concert and they never performed. They never got on stage. And yeah, at least this one, there's no draft parties. There's no preparation. You're not going to draft in the first round. And I don't see in any realm or world where the Seahawks come back up into this first round and get on the front page. Maybe not even, frankly, the second round, if I had to bet. I don't think they're going to, I bet everything on them not picking in the first. And I'd probably bet that they're going to try as much as they can to trade out of 56 and add in the third and fourth and fifth round of this draft.
I'm hoping that, they almost have to trade out of 56, right? Because they just have so few picks. I'm hoping that means they at least find a way to stay in the second round. But I understand what you're saying. The third round may end up being where we first see them. But it just feels weird, right? I mean, the NFL draft is hope. That's what it's all about. Why do we spend, and when I say we, I mean sort of the sports media complex. Why do we spend so much time talking about drafts? Because their future, their hope, every fan loves the idea of the draft, whether it's the NBA or the NFL, whatever it is, because it gives them the opportunity to think about how things can be better than they are right now.
And it can change the fortune of your entire program.
Of course it can.
Patrick Mahomes, you trade up for, and the Kansas City Chiefs are never the same again. Russell Wilson was drafted in the third round in the
Seahawks.
But it
doesn't have to be
that.
It doesn't have to be those complete franchise game changers. Obviously, those are the extreme examples. But even when you have a normal draft and you're bringing in six new guys and you just want to get to meet them and figure out what they're going to do to your team, or whether it's depth or a new starter. I mean, DK Metcalf. I mean, there's so much excitement around what it can do to your franchise. Yes, you're right, Brock. Obviously, the franchise changers. But even beyond that, it's hope. Yep. And for the Seahawks right now, if you're a Seahawks fan, I think it's hard to look at this draft and see how it's going to significantly change your fortunes in the next couple of years. The only way, honestly, for me to kind of get through draft weekend is by thinking, okay, Jamal Adams is really good. Just keep repeating that phrase to yourself over and over again. If you believe it, if you're a Jamal Adams fan, you just have to keep saying Jamal Adams is really good, because it's the only way you can look at the fact that you don't have a first or a third rounder. And that's before you even get into the fact that you don't have another first rounder next year, which I think is going to really drive people crazy.
Yeah.
You got to just keep repeating to yourself, Jamal Adams is really good. He's amazing. Is he?
Well, Jamal Adams, or you can also frame it this way, and I saw this done in the social media realms, Jamal Adams was your first round pick. You have your second round pick. Your third round pick was Jamal Adams.
Right.
You
That's what I mean.
Round pick. Your fifth round pick's Gabe Jackson. Your sixth round pick's Carlos Dunlap. And you move forward from there. I mean, you decided to part way with those draft picks for those players, for Jamal, for Gabe, and for Carlos.
People can kind of handle the late round picks. Okay, fine. There's not a sixth rounder. But Jamal, it's about Jamal Adams. It is. Yep. Is Jamal Adams, first of all, is the deal going to get done?
2 days before the draft. Doesn't look like it.
Okay.
Doesn't look, who knows? It could come out at any time. As I say that, and we tape this podcast, it could come out at any point before the draft. They are negotiating. The two sides have been talking.
Do you get any sense it's going to be done soon? It doesn't, nope. I'm going to say possibly the dumbest thing I've said in a while. It doesn't feel like it's going to get done soon.
Oh, goodness gracious.
I don't have any knowledge of that. I don't know what's going on in their negotiation. So it's when I say it doesn't feel that way, it means quite literally zero.
Here you go with your feelings.
I know, so it's going to be done
your
by
press
time.
Your feelings were No Man Land was terrible, and it turns out it's an Oscar
winning
film.
No Man Land was awful.
Brock, that's not a feeling. That's a statement of fact. It's a bad movie.
Howdy, did it win an Oscar or did it not win an Oscar?
Did
you see it, Howdy?
No. Absolutely
smart move.
Not.
Will you
Don't
see it?
No.
I can't honestly say I saw it either. I turned it off. I watched maybe a half hour, and I turned to Heather. I was like, this is such garbage. We have to turn this off.
And is Heather on board at that point, or is she just like, all right, Mike? I don't want to listen to another hour
appreciate
of you
art?
About this.
Can you appreciate art and beauty?
When we turned off Nomadland, she was fine with it. She understood how boring it was, but said, maybe I'll go back and watch it later. When I ruthlessly made fun of it during the Oscars and said, if this thing wins Best Picture, I'm never watching this show ever again. She didn't like that. No, no, and then when I continued my tirade afterwards, that wasn't good. I didn't think it could actually win. I will say, I would have bet. How much were you willing to bet earlier, Brock? What were you betting on? You're betting on them not drafting in the first or second round?
Correct.
Would have bet on that, I would have bet on Mank winning. Because it's about Hollywood. Yeah, the Academy just, it's about movies.
Ooh,
let's go.
Oh, finally, somebody's going to tell our story, finally.
Right. Now, didn't they just do that last year with the Tarantino movie, right? Mm. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. So maybe they felt like they...
Was that 2 years ago?
Who knows, man?
But then La La Land before that? I mean, come on.
But anywho,
thanks
back to
about
your,
old
back
Hollywood.
To your, back to your feelings. Go ahead. Yeah. Your feelings are this is not going to get done.
Not right now. Not like in the next 2 days.
So, yeah, I would agree with that. And
so
I
now you're going into the draft with an unsigned Jamal Adams, who's worth your first and third round pick, not to mention your first rounder next year. And I like Jamal Adams. Do you love Jamal Adams?
Yeah, I'm closer to the love side of it. Yes, on that spectrum of like and love, I'm closer on the love. I love that he loves to play. I love that he loves to play defense. I love that he's violent. I love that he can wear a bunch of different hats. I love that he's kind of a positionless piece, part linebacker, part pass rusher, part strong safety, and can do all of that. And I love the fact that Pete loves him. And he brings some of that gist that was missing for 2 or 3 years. That once Richard and Earl, that edge, right? I mean, we talked about that in the second half of the season. He turned the worst defense in the history of the NFL into a much, much better defense.
True.
That helped them win games. So, yes, I am a little bit more, I think, as the season evolved, as I looked at the big picture, as I look at how he fits in his demeanor, in his personality, in his style. It isn't always my style or my cup of tea, but it is Pete's. It's what he covets, and he needs that safety, and he needs that fire starter, and that igniter, and he is all of those things. I don't love that he's had his labrum fixed and his fingers fixed, and he needs his other shoulder fixed. I don't love that aspect of it, because we know just how violent this game is at that position and how quickly Earl Thomas and Cam Chancellor and those guys can go. Right. From 100 to out of the league and be done. So I don't love that aspect of it. Mm-hmm. But yes, in that like love thing, I'm a whole lot closer to tipping the scale towards love.
I think those are all really, really good points. And I would tend to agree with you. I am probably closer to love than like also. And that again, that's what's kind of getting me through draft weekend here. I would love for him to what we need from him is to make a few game changing plays. Right. That's really what you're paying for. And I think we saw some of that last year with the sacks. Obviously, 9.5 sacks is a lot. The only disappointment I had in Jamal Adams, other than the injuries, was I guess I was hoping for more turnovers. He forced one fumble. That was the extent of his turnovers last year. No interceptions, forced one fumble. Now, maybe he contributed to more interceptions with pressure, but, you know, I don't want to make that a criticism. It's not a criticism. It's just that for the amount of investment there, and this is sort of my problem with the Seahawks defense in general, is, you know, why did they lose the game to the Rams in the playoffs? Turnovers.
It's all about
game-changing
plays.
It's
all about the ball.
Right, that's the sign in Pete's office. It's all about the ball, or in their meeting rooms, everywhere you go.
Yes.
Well,
it's all about the ball, taking the ball away.
How are they going to take the ball away more? Because I know that the common belief is the Seahawks got beat by the Rams because of Russell Wilson or something. I can't quite like put my finger on it because of their offensive scheme.
Kyle, put your finger on it.
What is it? It's because the Seahawks have the wrong offense. That's why they lost to the Rams?
Yes.
Right. Yeah, okay. Among other things. The wrong quarterback, the wrong offensive coordinator, the wrong head coach.
Right. Because of that, the Seahawks lost to the Rams. It has nothing to do with the 2-0 turnover advantage, right? It has nothing to do with the bizarre pick six and then DJ Reed fumbling the ball as the Seahawks were starting to come back. It has nothing to do with the Seahawks defense forcing exactly zero turnovers in the game to give their team a half. It has nothing to do with that. It's just that they have the wrong offensive scheme. That's it. I get it. Now I understand.
That's 100% randomness. There's nothing they can do to prepare for that.
What are you talking about?
Being able to predict defensive turnovers is complete randomness. The fact that you let games get to that spot at all is a travesty based on the personnel that they have.
The number one predictor of wins and losses in the NFL is turnover ratio.
What's the number one predictor of how guys get signed in the NFL? The number of turnovers they get? Like how do you predict how many turnovers a guy's going to get in a season? You can't do that. That's impossible.
You can't predict that Richard Sherman is going to have more interceptions in his prime than Trey Flowers.
Can you predict that any player beyond like the top two at every position can perform in turnovers? That's like the least dependable stat.
Well,
possible.
Fair, but what I think you can say is a team that is going to generate pressure on the quarterback, force teams into making mistakes, force quarterbacks to act before they're ready, has guys in their secondary with good ball skills that are primed and ready to take the ball away, that a team like that hits hard enough to jar the ball loose, that a team that does all those things and has speed will cause more turnovers. And the Seahawks didn't do that. So then they happened to turn the ball over twice in that game, and both plays were somewhat fluky, fine. But when you lose a turnover battle 2-0, you're probably going to lose a game, especially in the playoffs where every team is good. So,
and every player has strengths and weaknesses. That's what this draft is all about, trying to figure that out and project it. And we'll kind of dig into what I think is an unbelievably fascinating draft. I mean, we've been doing talk radio in San Francisco for the last 2 months. Couldn't imagine the ratings. They're going to be absolutely off the charts, and it's a must-see of what they're going to do. But there's strengths and weaknesses, and Jamal doesn't play the ball well. He dropped a bunch of interceptions. He had trouble covering Julian Edelman. Like he's not that is not the strength of his game. The strength of his game is a run stopper. The strength of his game is a pass rusher. Strength of his game is to be around the line of scrimmage. That is what he does. Shaq Griffin was not a guy with great ball skills. Trey Flowers is not a guy with great ball skills. Diggs, I think, does. I think he's got the ability to catch it on the back end of it. But, you know, those are, I think, you know, I understand what you're talking about, Howdy. From a statistical standpoint, you're right. It's very hard. And I talk to these coaches all the time and have for 12 years. Oh, man, if we knew how to create takeaways and we do these takeaway drills and we learn about it. And, you know, the 39 takeaways that were created in the Super Bowl year, man, how can we do that again? Well, good luck. Good luck with that.
Don't you think starting with pressure and forcing other quarterbacks, et cetera, yes, into making mistakes is a pretty good way to start? And that's why, I mean, honestly, that to me is the argument in favor of Jamal Adams. All right, fine. He doesn't have the greatest ball skills in the game when he's back deep playing safety. But how many bad decisions does he force a quarterback into making? How many balls
how many
is he able to
in
get?
In the history of the league, have got more sacks than Jamal Adams in a year.
Right. Exactly.
And not even playing the entire year.
And that doesn't include the pressure that he generates or adds to when he's not getting to the quarterback. So, you know, with those 9.5 sacks, is he able to help them generate enough pressure, enough difficulty for the opposing team that they end up turning the ball over more often? I think that's what you've got to bank on if you're going to sign him to big money and now having given up all of these draft picks in order to get him. So,
and feel good that he is your first and third round pick in this draft. As you said, that's how you're kind of processing and getting to Thursday and getting to that first round. Yep, okay. Our first rounder was Jamal Adams, and our third rounder was Jamal Adams. And John and Pete, you got a lot of work to do to try to figure out how you're going to continue to hopefully find starters in this draft and some impact players for you.
Yeah, and that, you know, now you start to look at their offseason in general, because the draft in and of itself isn't everything, right? It's got to be taken in context with everything else they do. And I think from a free agency standpoint, don't you feel like they've done a pretty good job so far this offseason? It's not perfect, but I mean, they've done pretty well, right?
Yeah, Jamal, Gabe, and Carlos. Yeah, I think so. I think getting Gabe Jackson and Carlos Dunlap are pretty significant line of scrimmage pieces that you weren't going to find.
You had another corner that you like, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, I think they've done well. Still waiting to see what happens with KJ Wright. Still waiting to see kind of how they, you know, if there's more interior defensive line depth.
Another wide receiver.
Starter, right? Another wide receiver. So, you know, you're not, you can't grade it and say it's done yet. But I don't know. I guess I this is a strange draft weekend.
Well, for how many years was this the epicenter of our off seasons?
Well, that's what I was going to say. And even going back, Brock, I was going to compare this to Pete's first year. And the excitement over having, what was it, 6-14, right? And that ends up turning into Earl Thomas and Russell Okung, right? Yes. I mean, just you have 6-14. And then, you know, you end up bringing in some of these next few guys and just the building of something. It honestly feels a little bit like where the Mariners are at right now. You can see where this is going. You got 6, you got 14, you've got a new coach, you've got some talent. All of a sudden there's a quarterback that gets added to it, and you feel the way the momentum starts to surge. The Seahawks now are in such a completely different phase of their life, and it's a hanging on phase, but that doesn't have to be a negative. And certainly if we've learned anything from watching Bill Belichick and the Patriots over the last two decades, it's that just when you think that they're done, they're not, because why? Quarterback's everything. Yep. And you get the quarterback. Yep. So yeah, you're not in ascension phase where you're about to ascend to the top. You're in this sort of maintaining and trying to do marginal things to get better. But they've got to do a few of those things because you've got Russell Wilson. He's in his prime, and let's go.
Man, since 6-14, right, in that opening draft, they also had, was it the following year, where maybe they were 7-9 and they were like 15 or 16, and we talked every D end under the sun, Melvin Ingram, all of those guys, right?
And Quentin Copels.
Quentin Copels, good pull.
Yeah, you like that?
Yeah.
You like that? He went to the Jets, right?
Yes, he did. And did that.
Melvin Ingram and the other guy was, I'm going to remember his name. Hold on. Ugh, I can't remember it.
Yes.
He's still in the league, I think.
We spent a ton of time, and then I think they traded down a little bit and ended up getting Bruce Irvin, right?
Yep.
And since then, you have basically lived in the 20s for the entirety of the draft. And now you traded one of them for Jimmy Graham, kind of like this situation. You traded one of them for Percy. So you took some risk and got rid of your 20-something for, you know, some bona fide difference makers, or what they thought would be star power players that ended up not necessarily being that. But you have lived in the 20s. You have not been everybody else in your division. You have not been the Rams. You have not been the 49ers. It's got another number 3 pick. You know, you've not been the Arizona Cardinals with top 10 picks. You have had to live in the 20s, which is why, what did you call it? The hanging on phase? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's where you are. And they decide this year, in this crazy draft, in this crazy evaluation, in this crazy COVID year, you know, maybe even more reason to make that move for Jamal Adams and give our first and third for him, because this is going to be an unprecedented draft with less data points than any of these programs, certainly an established one like the Seahawks, have ever had.
What are the Niners going to do with that third pick?
What are the Jets going to do with the second pick?
Oh, they're going to take the kid from BYU, aren't they?
Are you sure?
I mean, no, but reasonably sure.
I'm pretty sure Trevor Lawrence can go number one.
Okay.
After that, I think these Jets have been pretty coy. I think everybody has just written that into their mock. Joe Douglas, the GM there, and And I know some of the other folks in that administration and the app, they just, you not heard boo from them. Not one single word, and you shouldn't. And I hope that they're making Kyle and John fret in San Francisco just a little bit. Because did you see the report earlier this week that Shanahan kind of opened his mouth and said, yeah, you know, when we came up and made that move, had a pretty good idea. But now, after going through this for 2 months, there's actually a lot of guys that we like. So I'm very curious who that first one was. For me, that would have been, and I've said this all the way along, Justin Fields. You're going to go up to number three or number two. Boy, you better hope it's the guy that you really love.
So let me make sure I hear yes. you here. I want to make sure we have this right. So Trevor Lawrence goes number one.
For sure.
Right?
Done deal.
For sure. There's no doubt.
No question.
I did read something recently where somebody was like, I'd have a hard time. I don't know. Anyway. All right. So Trevor Lawrence goes one. What do the Jets do?
Everybody says Zach Wilson from BYU. That has been written in the
I'm not asking you what everybody says. I can read just like you can, but I want to know what you think.
I would take Justin Fields.
Oh,
absolutely.
Two. He's the
Zach
second
Wilson,
best quarterback.
Zach Wilson had an amazing year behind an incredible offensive line, playing very little competition. He had to fight for his job in a three-way QB battle just last August with two other guys from BYU. To win
doesn't he have
job.
Great arm talent?
He's got remarkable arm talent. He's got the loosest, best arm. He could throw 98. He's also 210 pounds. He also had a hard time staying healthy at BYU his first 2 years.
Well, that sounds like a perfect Jets pick. I got to tell you, he sounds ideal for the New York Jets.
I was just chatting with Kalani Sitake, the head coach, and I tried to frame it this way. And they're all excited.
The head coach of the Jets' name is Kalani Sitake.
No, he's the head coach of BYU. Stop it. And I kind of framed the question that way. I said, I'm curious how many of these scouts have come through here, Kalani, and asked you, like, how does the number two pick in the draft just 8 months ago fight in a three-way QB battle with two other guys in a legitimate battle?
So is this? So let me ask you then: is Zach Wilson, right? Is his name? Is Zach
yes.
Wilson this year's Blaine Gabbert?
No, he's a much more talented thrower than Christian Ponder or Blaine Gabbert or Jake.
No, I don't mean it like that. I don't mean like the same player. I mean more like the player who was never that good that all of a sudden he starts getting draft momentum, and the next thing you know, he's a top five pick.
I would say no. This started kind of September, October, that he started to make plays that are just wow plays. It's Puig throwing it from the left field warning mm-hmm. track to home plate. Like, you just don't do that. And those are real. I mean, that is real. This is not bash Zach Wilson, but he's 6'2". He's 210. He had one remarkable year. Sophomore year, he was injured. He was benched. He was pulled. All of that stuff. And to me, if I'm going to New York City, man, I want something substantial.
Right.
I want some.
So you want Justin Fields because he's been at Ohio State. He's seen the bright lights, big city, right?
Played on the biggest stage. He's been knocked down. He had to transfer out of Georgia in a situation that was not ideal. He breaks his back, a vertebrae.
But that's
back.
Not a problem for you. That's no more. I mean, so if you're part of your criticism of Zach Wilson is he had to be in a three-way battle. This kid lost a battle to Jake Fromm, who's
Correct.
Nobody, and
Correct.
Then transferred. So he's not your – he doesn't get dinged with the same problem?
I'm going to guess people have speculated, why is his draft stock fallen, that when they've done some of that digging, I bet you there's some executives that didn't love that. Mm-hmm. That didn't love that. Now, he responded. He went there and beat everybody else out, and there were super talented kids at Ohio State. And from day one, it was pretty clear, like Russell at Wisconsin, like, what in the world was Kirby freaking Smart thinking? That was not smart to pick Jake Fromm over Justin Fields and to go down that road. So I think the 2 years said more to the decision makers at Georgia than it did the ramifications of that move. But yes, that is why Trevor is a lock, and these other four will likely be what we have seen in the last 10 years with first round picks, 80% bust rate. 80% bust rate when you take your first round pick over the last 10 years. And even Carson Wentz and Goff, who probably would not be characterized as busts, who got second deals from their programs, both said, yeah, thanks, but no thanks. Yeah, you're going to move on to Indy and Detroit. So however you want to quantify and qualify them. But yeah, there's a ton of risk. And you know what else is funny, man? A lot of these QBs that I've chatted to and with over the last month or so, you survey most former QBs out there, Orlovsky and Leaf and Jim Miller and EJ Manning, just the guys doing this analysis. You know who most would take number two? Justin Fields. So I think it would be utterly fascinating if the Jets take Justin Fields number two, because just my belief and my gut, just parsing through and not even reading some of these other headlines, is that's who Shanahan wanted. That's the guy that runs 4-4. That's the guy that when he watched him in the national semifinal play against Clemson in the Blitzfest and take a helmet to his back and break his rib, throw for 500 yards and 5 touchdowns and beat him. In that night when Shanahan's in his hotel room, like the rest of us watching it who have played the position, who know it's about overcoming adversity at the next level, went, that's my guy. Jimmy Garoppolo tapped out. Jimmy Garoppolo had an ankle this year that, you know, just for the whole season never got right. And on the biggest stage in the Super Bowl, you know, didn't pull the trigger multiple times. And on the throw he had to make, didn't make it. That's the guy that I want. And that's why I'm not buying any of this other Mac Jones or Trey Lance or any of this stuff. I think when they make that move to three, that's the guy that he had his heart sold on. As they've gone through this evaluation, he's probably gone, ooh, you know, there are still some red flags there. Gosh, I kind of like the way these other guys spin it. Geez, Trey Lance has a really high ceiling. Man, Mac Jones has got great feet and anticipation. Yeah, and you could fall in love with different traits. But the bottom line, the entire body of work and that body physically, give me Justin Fields.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm with you. Can you imagine in this day and age, Brock? Maybe you can, but can you imagine drafting a quarterback who can't make plays with his legs? I can't imagine it.
Hard.
I don't care if it's Peyton Manning, and I know Tom Brady just won another Super Bowl. I'm aware of the fact that you can win games without being mobile at the quarterback position. I understand it. But if you ask me to draft somebody now and put my stock in someone, if they can't run, I don't think I'm going to take that bet.
Yep.
It's so hard. I mean, it's so hard to get that position right that I guess what the running ability, the mobility ability brings is another opportunity for success.
Well, it erases mistakes around you. Up front.
Yes, of which
and
there's
we know
many.
How hard it is yes. to block in this league and in this division.
But so, it's also, Brock, you can be wrong about so many parts. Is his arm as good as it's supposed to be? Is his head as good as it's supposed to be? Is he as accurate? Will he process quickly enough? All of those questions are legitimate, even with the Andrew Lux of the world, the super prospects. But if they can also run, well, okay, yeah, all right, maybe this thing wasn't quite as good as we thought it would be, or maybe this doesn't play in the NFL as well, but at least he can still run.
Which is what Andrew and Trevor both did.
The
bona fide number ones of the last 10 years that you felt great about, and both of those guys were absolutely good enough athletes to get out and press a defense and at least make them think, and boy, if my right guard gets beat and he can't block anybody, then instead of taking 6 sacks, right, he's able to create. And so, yeah, that's where Mac Jones
falters, right?
Yes. What's that?
So that's where he fails the test. And that, you know, I've been sitting here hoping, and I've heard some rumbling that's where he'll be the guy who ends up in San Francisco. That it'll be Mac Jones. If you're a Seahawks fan and you're rooting for the Niners to screw this whole thing up, you're probably rooting for them to take Mac Jones or Trey Lance because he's never played against any competition.
Yep.
You don't want them to take Justin Fields, an Ohio State quarterback who's had a lot of success. The only knock, really, on Justin Fields is, one,
the
whole thing at Georgia. Well, I was going to say, one, what happened at Georgia.
And
two, the Ohio... Yeah, but that's not his fault.
No, it's not.
I hate that argument.
I
can't stand it.
I know you do.
Unless it's from BC, in which case, don't bother. Unless it's like we all know not to take a kid
from
BC.
College, huh?
Right.
It's pretty good stuff.
That can't work. That can't work. It's not, but in all reality, it's not his fault that Haskins was a bust, right? That's not his fault.
No, but it is a system that makes everybody look good. It's a system that JT Barrett, it became the record holder and broke every single Big Ten mark. And because your people around you are so good, they play at a speed so much better than everybody else that for 9 games, right, you get to
face... Isn't that true of Mac Jones, too?
To face the bullpen to a degree, and especially this last season in the SEC. I mean, that would be another factor is like, you didn't play. Yeah, I know you beat LSU, but you didn't really play in Baton Rouge in front of 100,000 people.
Right.
You played in nearly empty stadiums and got the benefit of 4 first round wide receivers over your last 2 years as you've played there, and NFL first round running back and first round everywhere. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, to the same degree. Let's see how well Tua does. Let's see how well Jalen Hurts does, right? Because we have seen some of these Ohio State quarterbacks, and they have struggled. And once again, why is Justin Fields stock falling? What is going on here? What's happening with all this? We are in the lying and sabotage state of things 48 hours before this draft. And I do think this is one of the more fascinating ones that we have covered, even though the Seahawks are totally do not have a seat at the table. They're the anti-Latimer. They've got no seat at the table. None whatsoever.
Wow. This is getting to Trevor Lawrence, because obviously he's the surest thing in it. I know there's been this sort of conversation about whether or not he has the fire that still burns. Is it possible to be wary of a quarterback who's won too much? I know it sounds ridiculous. It does sound silly. It's just saying, oh, this guy's won too much. Is there any trepidation at all that he doesn't have the same fire and intensity, and then I don't know. Do you have any concern about that?
Well, I don't know if it's about winning too much, but the comp is Andrew Luck.
Right.
And Andrew Luck walked away after 6 years.
Yeah. And you and I can't possibly understand that.
And injuries are part of it. Right.
You and I don't understand what he did at all. We think that's just wrong. And the idea of just walking out on something that you've done we just don't get it. I mean, you do that when they force you out, right?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad that we're on the same page.
But are there evaluators that are curious about that? Absolutely. How about winning too much? Trey Lance never lost a game, Mike.
But that's not fair. He hasn't lost a game, and he's playing against Boy Howdy.
The scouts have asked their coaching staff, how does he handle adversity?
Last year, I think Trey Lance beat, like, Redmond High. I mean, like, who cares? Trey Lance hasn't lost a game. Don't play anybody.
Man, take it easy.
He went 17-0 and threw 28 touchdowns without an interception.
I know, but I think one of those games was against the BB&N Knights, Eddie Bourget and his crew. I don't think his wins meant a ton.
If you're Kyle Shanahan, okay, I've given you my very strong declarative opinion. If you're Kyle Shanahan and you have your team in San Francisco and your stage of your career for Kyle, which is, man, two Super Bowls got away from me, right, in Atlanta and San Francisco, chance to win both those. Could be a two-time champ, one as a coordinator, one as a head coach. And this is the biggest decision that you have made in your tenure ever. And John Lynch has basically said, ball's in your court, man. You know, you do what you want to do. Whose name are you calling?
Assuming that 1 and 2 go the way they're supposed to, I think I'm with you. I'm probably going to bank on Justin Fields because of the competition he's played against, the accuracy, and ultimately his legs. Like, I'll take all of those things together. But I will say this, Brock, the nightmare scenario is that they get Zach Wilson. And the reason why, and it wouldn't be necessarily anywhere else, but in San Francisco, with the amount that they want to run the ball, the idea of having a quarterback with just crazy arm talent who can make the scary throw, maybe he's not the most consistent, but if they're doing the, like, you know, run the ball, need an incredible play, Zach Wilson would scare the bejesus out of me if he was in San Francisco.
I think it's fair. Howdy, Kyle.
I hope they draft Mac Jones. I'm not worried about that guy at all.
Same. Well, I'm with you.
Please take Mac Jones with the third pick. That'd be manna from heaven.
Clayton is adamant that that's who they're going to pick, that they're going to pick Mac Jones. So, that would be a dream scenario. Absolutely. But I don't want to see Justin Fields. I do not want to see Justin Fields over there. Yeah, no way.
I'm with you.
Yeah, and that's a good point, Salk. Yeah, I've not heard many people bring that up with Zach Wilson. If he's got to be like Russell was early in his career, and you got a run game and an amazing defense, and I need you to make five spectacular plays, not 25. He's got a more unique arm than Trevor and Justin and any of these guys. I mean, he can make he can fit it into places and throw it down the field and, you know, be on the move, and, you know, I'm not going to say Mahomes-esque, but he's got an ability to make some plays that these other guys can't.
And you could make the argument that Justin Fields is the best fit for the Jets. Right? I mean, he's played under the I know that Columbus isn't exactly New York City, but the amount of attention that Ohio State gets, versus being at BYU out in the middle of nowhere, and I don't know, the potential inconsistency with Zach Wilson, if I were running everybody's draft, I think I would go Trevor Lawrence 1. I would go Justin Fields to the Jets. I think that's the better fit. Yep. And then the number 3 pick to San Francisco would end up being Zach Wilson. That, to me, would be putting the right fit in each place. But, you know, the one thing that we've learned about NFL GMs, they don't care about any of that. They just seem to like, well, but this guy's, this is how we've done it. So let's go here. I mean, like, you know, this guy was the head. He was, this guy was the successful offensive coordinator in the best team. So we've got to have him as our head coach.
And yet they spend tens of thousands of dollars on this decision with manpower in every direction of college scouting and turning over every stone. And the amount of Saban had a hilarious Saban's been pretty good, by the way, Nick Saban, the last month or so with some sound bites talking about the 8 drafts that he was a part of and the, you know, the 3 weeks of listening and the 2 weeks of preparing and the 2 more weeks of mock drafts. And, you know, all of these hours and all of these weeks and all of this time that goes into these decisions. And for Robert Saleh and Joe Douglas, head coach and GM in New York, and for John Lynch and Shanahan, you know, in head coach and GM in San Francisco, their livelihoods will depend on getting this one right.
Did you see how the Rams rented out this Malibu beach home, right, to try to one up what the Cardinals did with Cliff Kingsbury last year? Have you seen the story at all?
Yes.
So they rented out this thing, right? Kingsbury made a comment about how they were going to be sipping rosé or what. Anyway, I found myself thinking about like what the Seahawks should do. Don't you think they should just like get a spa? Like they don't have anything to do all weekend, so just like get a spa, get a massage, and like when they go to John, he'll be on the massage table face down, and he can just kind of raise his hand for the pick, look up for a moment, be like, "Oh yeah, we'll take the linebacker at Colorado," and then put his head back down or something, and then you just move on because they don't have much to do this weekend.
See, this is where I thought you were going to go. They're just going to eat Famous Dave's, or they're on a helicopter above Ascend. So I thought you were told that, man.
That would be good. That would be good. Well, I do have some Ascend to talk. Let me tell you about this because we're coming up on Mother's Day, right?
Yeah.
Right? You need an idea for mom. You got Ascend at home Mother's Day. Take out 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, May 9th, which is Mother's Day. So you can do the Mother's Day brunch. But here are some menu. I know Howdy likes the menu highlights. So these are for Howdy.
The menu highlights.
All right. You ready for number one?
Yes.
I want to see if Howdy knows what all of these things are. I know all of these words except for one. Matcha cinnamon rolls with spiced chantilly.
Matcha. Interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know what chantilly is.
Neither do I.
I would think it's a mushroom. But that doesn't
make
a lot of sense.
Oh, that's chanterelle. That's because of chantrelle.
Yes, it's chanterelle mushrooms. But that's otherwise.
Matcha is like a green tea deal. Yes, and while I don't particularly care for it, this is for Mother's Day. My wife loves anything like matcha green tea lattes. She's all into that. I don't know what chantilly is other than the Big Bopper song Chantilly Lace. You'll have to look that up. How about strawberry granola canopy? I don't know what a canopy is, but it sounds good, doesn't it?
It's canape.
Elite.
Canape? It's not canape, I don't think. Heirloom tomato salad, American Wagyu filet and egg custard, salmon Wellington, strawberry lavender creme brulee. Oh, that sounds good. And raspberry rose macaron and dark chocolate blackberry truffle all put together. That sounds ridiculous. I want that. I know all those words. Which helps. Dark chocolate blackberry truffle. Don't that sound good for
you
Mother's Day?
You had me at salmon Wellington.
Oh, you like that?
I that's where I'm at.
Howdy, look up chantilly and figure out what that is. It's capitalized,
how do you spell
too.
Like chanterelle with illy instead?
C-H-A-N-T-I-L-L-Y. Chantilly. Chantilly lace, got a pretty face and a pony. That's all
chantilly
I know.
Chantilly cream, a synonym for whipped cream.
Oh.
Well, that sounds even better now. Matcha cinnamon rolls with spiced whipped cream.
Yes. Oh, okay. Yes.
Go to ascendprime.com. Hurry, don't be late. Get this on your schedule so that you don't have to worry about what you're going to do for mom this year. Celebrate the mom in your life at Ascend Prime Home and at ascendprime.com. Now I'm going to have Chantilly Lace in my head for like forever now. Do you know any other Big Bopper songs?
Just go stuff your face with whipped cream.
I would do that. Absolutely do that.
You know, my mom says she doesn't like whipped cream.
What do you mean she says? Are you accusing her of lying?
Yeah,
oh.
I am.
Oh.
Yeah, straight up. And my mom listens to this, so I know she'll kind of call me and get mad at me. But everyone likes whipped cream. Correct. Nobody doesn't like whipped cream. But she says she doesn't. I'm convinced she says she doesn't like whipped cream to keep herself from eating it. I think she secretly loves whipped cream. Mm. And if she's like, I think she's like, it's a mind over matter trick, where if she just keeps saying she doesn't like it, then she won't eat it.
I know somebody in my life who does that with peanut butter chocolate together. Don't you as well?
Well, my dad legitimately doesn't like peanut butter and chocolate together.
That's not true. Nobody does.
I think trust me, my dad would happily eat all that. He eats like a 12-year-old kid. Like, he didn't care. So I think my mom's lying to herself, really.
Now,
so
does she go Cool Whip? Does she just go the other way?
She won't eat anything. She's, oh, no, I'm good. I don't like whipped cream. She's just, come on. Of course you do.
Come on,
everybody
Jane.
Likes whipped cream. Come on, Mom. Get it together. Obviously, you like whipped cream. So any Mariners debate that you're having right now, I think the crux of it, Brock, comes back to this question of how much should they be investing in this year's team? Now, it's easier to kind of have that debate before you lose a couple to Boston and Houston. But, well, you know, they're going to go up and down. We'll see them. They appear to be, at the moment, like, you know, a 500 baseball team. And we'll see whether or not they end up going above or below that mark. But how much do you want to invest in this year's team? And I guess the answer I keep coming up with is invest, but not at the risk of any long-term development.
Correct.
So they should invest.
So you're just talking dollars, because you're not investing in any way of giving up your own capital.
Well, maybe. I'm not talking about giving up my high-quality capital, but that doesn't mean you don't have assets in the minor leagues that you're not willing to part with. I mean, you have to be. And depending on what you can get back, sure, you should be looking at that. I mean, I guess what it means, let me describe it and define that a little bit more. It definitely means being willing to spend money on any long-term investment that you think you can bring in. Right. Maybe it's a deadline deal. If you can take on a salary for the next 3 years or somebody like that, that a team is doesn't want to pay for. I think you should be considering that. Right.
Yes.
You're going to end up having to do some of that in free agency. So if the right person is there now, why not? Well,
yes.
You should absolutely be looking
Agreed.
At that. It means a shorter leash with some of your longer shots. So like Dylan Moore, why is Dylan like what leash does Dylan Moore get? Why does Dylan Moore get a leash? Because he hit a couple home runs in a short year. Like, Dylan Moore is a,
Dude,
what, seventh-round pick?
Have you seen his diving catches? Easy on Dylan Moore.
Dylan Moore is one of the highest-rated defensive players in the infield in all of baseball.
In the that's history true. Of baseball.
I that's fine.
He's got four stolen bases. No times he's been caught.
Why are you What's so worried about what
ten
he
walks. He leads the
why,
team.
Why are you worried about what he can't do? Okay? So he can't
like
hit.
One,
he hits about
he's hitting like 112. What do you mean?
Why don't you focus on what he can
do? Can you invest in this year's team? They have 14 players who have taken an at-bat this season.
Yeah.
Eight of them are hitting
under 200.
Under 200.
It's amazing. And I know the batting average.
The team is hitting under 200.
Not it's sustainable, Hattie.
Well, not just under 200, under 179.
Yeah.
Under 179.
It's really remarkable how, I mean, and I know batting average isn't popular, but it's still pretty shocking when you see those numbers over and over. Like, man, this guy's hitting 112 and this guy's hitting 082. And like, hey, look, J.P. Crawford's crushing the ball. He's hitting 230. Like,
he's drawn a lot of walks. He's getting on base.
Absolutely. No, yeah. The point isn't to rip Dylan Moore or anybody else. It's just like, how long does the leash need to be? Well, shorter on Dylan Moore than with some of the guys that you like than on Evan White, where he's part of your long-term development and you're, you know, he's a first-round pick, et cetera, versus guys like, yeah, well, if it works out, great, but you don't need it to work out in order for your future to be set. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I'd like to see, you know, you can change some of those guys out. If it means that Sam Haggerty gets a few more games where he starts at second base, if he can catch fire, fine. I'm not worried about Dylan Moore's long-term development. If it means I've got to bring up Cal Raleigh and figure out what he's got at the major league level as a catcher, I'm not too worried about Torrens or Tom Murphy in the same way. If it means I've got to play more Ty France in the field, whether it's second, third, first, whatever the case may be, second or third especially, okay. Like, I'm not that worried about, as again, Dylan Moore or Haggerty's development. So do I want to find out whether or not Ty France can play second base and maybe that he can't? Okay, yeah, why not? I do want to find those things out.
100%.
So I guess that's what it means. Whereas
on
the other hand,
is any of that even debatable? Is anybody on the other side of that?
I would hope not.
Howdy, you can't even be on the other side of that, right?
We're beating around the bush. What are you going to do about Evan White? He's a disaster. Evan White is a complete disaster, and he is yet to not be a disaster.
Tough conversation around Evan White.
What are you going
to
do?
He comes to the plate 2-1 in the eighth. You're down 3, and the conversation is, should we pinch hit him?
Mm-hmm.
So that's not the spot you want your future cornerstone first baseman in.
But, you know, most importantly, this does center in the development piece. Right? I mean, that is absolutely, is he not absolutely the poster boy, Mike, for what you're talking about? I don't think anybody could possibly debate what your catcher and second base.
Right.
The question
it's
is
Evan
really
White.
The Evan
and
White's.
I think you've got to be a lot more patient. My understanding, Howdy, and I don't know how to answer you right now. I mean, obviously, Evan White is struggling. He's shown no ability to hit at the major league level. I'm not going to argue in any way for that. So, yes, you've played your trump card first. There's no doubt.
Brock, I thought Sulk was going Joe Willie Namath on us there. Evan White is struggling.
He is struggling.
I don't care about Evan White struggling.
Can I kiss you, Howdy?
I want to kiss you,
Scott. I
want to
kiss you.
Struggling.
He is struggling. Obviously, he's struggling. The argument in favor of keeping Evan White and up and allowing him to do this is that when you invested in him, you believed that his mentality was such that he'd be able to handle that. Right? I mean, that has to be. That's the only way you can kind of justify it. That you believe that he knows you have enough faith in him that you're going to let him ride it out. And hey, all right, it's another ground out. It's another strike. Okay, we have faith in you. Keep working. You almost have to keep playing him in order because you're shooting the moon, right? You're pot committed on him, don't you think?
Ugh, no, I don't think you're pot committed on him at all. I think the only reason he's up at first base is because you have nobody else that you care about.
You could play Ty France or you could have Ty France or Marmolejo. I mean, there's other guys you can play there.
He signed a contract and did you a favor, and you are going to pay it forward by letting him ride out there and show every one of your other prospects.
Well,
if you did this, you'll be up here no matter what happens to you.
It is funny. The other side of that is, does Ty France at some point say, man, this is embarrassing. Like, send me down. Let me get this right and then bring me back. Let me just get my confidence back. I don't need a year in AAA. Yeah,
White, like, not Ty France, Evan White.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to. I'm sorry, I meant Evan White. Give me a month. Just let me just go get right. Right? I've been trying to play Chambers Bay, and it's really hard. Can't I just get over to, like, the Nile, hit a few good shots, let him stick on the greens, and then I'll go back to Chambers Bay?
Could you do that right there? How dare you, man?
Shots what? At the Nile?
How I'm not taking shots. I just said it's easier than Chambers. Is that a debate?
No. I don't care
about
the Nile.
One's a par 67.
I don't care about the Nile nor their hot dog. How dare you? The course that grew you, the course that developed you.
Yeah.
Willows and Coyote.
No.
Yeah, how
Eagle Talon.
How could you?
Well, because Coyote's got some tough holes, number 7, number 18. Like, there's some tough holes at Coyote. You know how many times I've gone in the water on number 7 at Coyote?
That,
like, a million times.
Made you.
That's true.
I did
have the best round of my life there. That's true.
Yes,
it did. All right, so go send me back to Coyote. I didn't want to insult Coyote, though, by making it sound AAA.
The tough part about first base is that there are a dozen guys who are retired right now who could come in, hit you 220, and play average first base.
Jay Bruce.
So should you invest in this team? It seems pretty obvious and simple that they're not going to do that just to win games.
Well, you can invest in this team in the places where you don't have potential cornerstone pieces that you're developing. That's why I keep talking about Dylan Moore. It's not a shot at him. It's just that he's not a first-round pick who you're developing like Evan White.
Evan White's 25 years old, never played in AAA, and you've been throwing him out here with no plan.
I understand that, Howdy. I'm not saying that it's necessarily the right plan. I'm saying that that's the direction they've gone. So if you're going to... if you're going to invest, you've got to invest in the margins, right? It means that, is there a possibility of bringing in a new pitcher now that you've lost a couple of guys to injury? There should be, right? A DePoto special, a guy with pitchability. This year's Chase DeYoung. Like, where's that guy, right? You can still invest in some places as long as it doesn't come at a hindrance to your plan with the guys you think are part of your long term.
Okay. So do you invest for this short term? Do you invest in any way for the short term of this team to win some games and win more than you did a year ago?
I think you can, but not at some position. Like, I don't think if you've determined, and I don't know whether this is it. How do you take your argument for Evan White off the table that they've done him wrong? Fine, you may be right, but if you are committed to keeping him at first base, then you can't go out and sign a first baseman for short-term help because it's messing up your long-term idea. I'm not saying it's the right thing. I'm just saying that's their thinking. Whereas, could you go out and sign another pitcher? Well, that doesn't come at anybody's expense. So go do it. Go do the things to help you win now as long as they don't come at the expense of winning down the road.
It's tough for me to say that they need to do that in starting pitching because they're trying to squeeze a can of a six-man rotation. They don't have to do that. They don't have to go get another starting pitcher.
But they think they do.
That is
not necessarily right away because they got a couple of off days.
Such a luxury based on what they're doing right now. They're trying to have their cake and eat it too with a six-man rotation in a league that doesn't have enough starting pitchers, and you're burning through it. You're just going to keep throwing money at a dead problem that's never going to be fixed. You can't have six good starting pitchers if you're not going to spend on your starting rotation. That doesn't make any sense.
And I'm not sure that, I don't know that they're going to eventually, but I think for now what they're looking at and saying, okay, we want these young guys to be as fresh as possible later in their career. They've read the arm, and they're trying, Jeff Passan's brilliant book on pitching injuries, and trying to avoid them. It's worked great with Paxton, but I don't know. With the rest of them, I mean, like, you watch Justin Dunn. I think he's done pretty well so far this year. Kikuchi's been healthy, et cetera. So, look, again, I don't know that I agree with all of their long-term ideas, but I think once you're invested in them, you've got to find ways to invest short-term without messing up the long term. So some questions, Mariners questions for you guys, since we're talking. Who's your favorite Mariner on this team? I know Howdy's is Evan White, but anyone else, favorite Mariner? Who's your favorite Mariner to watch on this team?
I love watching Justin Dunn. And I've been a big fan of Justin Dunn for a long time.
Yeah.
I'm pumping him up. When people have been saying that Mark Gavishus was going to be the guy, I stuck by Justin Dunn.
You like the high legs. Like, he's all legs.
He's all
little
legs.
Torso.
But I just love the idea that his stuff has so much upside, and all he has to do is rein it in a little. Like, he doesn't have to transform himself. He doesn't need to develop another pitch. He just needs to rein it in a little. Like,
Brock, favorite Mariner?
That's it.
This season, Ty France. I told you the redemption story of Mitch is still my favorite story, and I know that he struggled in the last couple games and didn't play the ball well last night, but my favorite Mariner when he comes up to the plate is Ty France.
Have you noticed how much he looks like Gary Woodland?
Oh my gosh. That's who it is.
That's shocking.
That's who it is.
Yeah, they're identical.
You.
They look
Thank
exactly
you,
alike. Yes.
Thank
this is-
you.
A very deep pull, but when Salk told me that last year, I was like, oh my gosh, he does look like the Kansas boy himself.
Absolutely,
yes.
Right.
I mean, it's not, what did he won the, did he win the U.S. Open a couple years ago? Or was
PGA,
it the PGA Championship?
PGA
I thought it was the U.S.
He's
Open.
Won a major. He's won a major.
He won the U.S. Open he did win the U.S. Open.
He did win the
yes.
U.S. Open.
Beat Kepka.
Yes. Yes, and he did it, where did he do it? I can see it in my mind.
I'm
he did it at Pebble. He did it at Pebble. He did it at Pebble Beach.
Yes.
How about that?
And
he
I
won
bet,
the US Open at Pebble Beach.
Now, does he have the same? There's no bigger rooster walk in the PGA.
No.
I watched him on the range. I watched him hit balls.
He and Ty France, they walk the same. They look the same. Like, it's tremendous. All right. My favorite Mariner is J.P. Crawford. And it doesn't mean he's the best Mariner, but I love him. I just love watching him play. I wish he would obviously hit a little bit more, get on base more, hit for a little bit more pop. But I love the way he plays defense. I love his energy. I love the bounce. I just, there's something about his smile. I love J.P. Crawford.
At some point, is his slugging going to surpass his on base?
I hope so. As I said, I didn't say he was the best Mariner. I
right
just said
now,
he's a guy I love.
Right now, the slugging's 267 and the on-base is 305.
Mike, can I pin you to this? Do the Mariners? Do the Mariners' hopes for playoffs in the near future hang on Evan White and J.P. Crawford?
I don't – in the near – like this year?
No, not this year, but in the
then
near
no,
future.
I don't think so.
Okay.
I don't think it hangs on those guys. I don't think so. I mean, we'll see. I love J.P. Crawford. I'm not sold. I want to be clear, but he is my favorite. Who is your – we've talked about this before, the 10th man, right, is the player that exceeds expectations the most. Who is your 10th man award right now a month into the Mariners
Sammy.
Season? Sam Haggerty?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Sammy. Swag?
He's only played like five games.
Bro, he's played 15. Man. Watch your mouth. Okay.
He's got three smart. Bags?
Yes.
All right. Sam Haggerty is the guy who's exceeded expectations the most.
Okay. Want a game for you? Yeah.
I would probably go with either Dunn or maybe even, Graveman. Were you expecting this out of Kendall Graveman?
No. But hard. Yeah, I give him a little more to a positional player and who's had to wear a few different hats and who's had to come in and pinch hit and the game's just not looked too big for him yet.
Wow.
I think he's third in your OPS.
What Graveman's
team,
doing though is awesome because
it is.
He's a flyer guy that you took a flyer on last year. And he's sort of living up to every hope that you had.
Mm-hmm.
When you projected him out, this is the kind of guy you saw, and he's playing it out right away. That's pretty
vicious.
Exciting.
Yeah. How about hitter on this team you'd want up in a big moment? It sounds like Evan White, again, is your answer here. It's got to be Ty France right now, right?
Yes.
Him or Haniger. There's basically two options there.
Well, Seager's had some big at-bats. Ask his
wife. He's been getting hot the last week.
You could make an argument, you haven't seen it yet, that Kyle Lewis will end up being that guy that you want up in a big spot. But it's got to be Ty France just because of the – he's just a pure hitter. Yeah. He's got that Manny Ramirez factor to him, and it's not that he doesn't play like Manny, he doesn't act like Manny, but just that, like, he no moment seems to get his heart rate going. He's just kind of a hitter. It's all the same to him. Yep. So I don't know. He'd be the guy for me. How about the pitcher you want on the mound in a big spot? Is that Graveman?
Yeah.
Yep.
Is there any other answer to that? It's not Kikuchi, I can tell you that much. No. Gosh, even when he's pitching well, it just the way the game all of a sudden starts to just slow down or for me and speed up for him, and the way he just loses the control. He frustrates me so much.
It's so tough to watch a guy with that good of stuff.
I know.
Just all of a sudden not be able to have the gumption to just
throw it. I know. It's so frustrating. There's so much Bedard to him when I watch. God, your stuff is so good. Why are you nibbling? What are you doing? Just use your good stuff.
What about flexing?
I can't go there yet. I'm not ready yet. But I will say, he might be my 10th man award winner. Honestly, because I wasn't expecting anything out of Chris Flexen. And what I've seen so far has made me look stupid.
What is his story? Humanize and analyze. What is Flexen's story?
What is humanize then analyze?
Oh,
what
you
is
don't
that?
Know that? Oh, you never
think
heard
I do.
That?
Huh? No, I know.
Oh, that was. I don't know. Let's see. That was ESPN seminar 2016.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's concentric circles.
He started his career with the Mets and was a train wreck. He was a disaster. He never pitched well at all in any season that he was there. And then sort of remade himself in Japan and came back this year. They felt like all of his
peripherals.
Korea, not Japan.
KBO,
yes,
baby.
In the KBO. Yeah, pitching to Daeho Lee, right?
That's right. Yes.
I would imagine. Yeah. Yeah. Daeho's the king of the Korean
league.
Daeho's
still hitting in the KBO. He hit a bomb the other day. He went over there. They felt like his peripheral said, this is going to retranslate to the majors, and they've been right.
They have been right. They honestly have been so far. Can I ask an important question, though, of just Brock and Kyle? What are the chances that Howdy knows that Daeho Lee actually hit a home run the other day? Or that he completely just made that up?
I think he knows because I saw something on Twitter, social media. I think one of the Mariners beat writers had shared.
Okay.
Like Daeho is still leading the Korean baseball league at 38 years old.
Howdy, is that true?
It's absolutely true. Yes, I did actually watch the highlight. He looks a little slimmer now. He looks a little slimmer now, I'll say.
Well, it's because they don't have as much ice cream over there. He loves the ice
cream. Start of the season. You wait till mid-year. All-star break.
So, quick question for you boys. Don't look at your stats. Swanson and Paxton are both out. They pitched one game. Kendall Graveman leads the team in whip, obviously. 0.35. Who's second? Swanson and Paxton are out. They don't qualify with anything.
I can tell you it's not Marco.
It's like Meshevitz or Sadler or something.
Who is second on whip on this team?
Will Vest. Flexen?
Nope.
Who is it, Brock? Just
Mr.
tell us.
Mr. Montero.
Oh, yeah. Well.
Who leads the team in blown save?
And who would I not want to see the ball in and trustworthy moment? Mr.
It's
Montero.
No kidding. So that's where we are with the Mariners, and regardless of any of these conversations, I think they're fun ones, right? And they've put themselves in a position now to be fun to watch, to be must watch, because you never know when they're going to. That series in Boston was awesome, especially the first couple games, and seeing them come back and the way they just don't give up on these games at all. They have a lot of personality to them, and Howdy's right. There are some legitimate questions. Obviously, Brock, when you see, what'd you say, 8 out of 14 guys hitting under 180? There's some issues there with the way they're hitting. I do have some level of faith that that will turn around, that those guys aren't 160 hitters, and that you'll see them eventually start. I mean, I don't, Torrens has hit better than that in his career. Dylan Moore showed last year that he's capable of doing better than that. So if those things start to happen, you know, and this pitching can keep up even just a sort of what it's been doing, they should continue to be really fun. Add in the personality, add in the smart baseball, add in playing hard, and you've got a team that you can't turn off.
Was it my guy Haggerty that outran the pitcher in the late innings with the lead?
That's right.
In Boston, right? I mean, to me, that was like honestly one of the most emblematic plays of the season.
Hustle play, right?
Oh, yes. You just play it to the very end and, you know, kind of a tapper to the first baseman. Pitcher's a little bit late, is kind of, you know, lazily tries to find the bag. And that dude is just busting it. And that was with the lead late in the game and another add-on run and just, you know, playing to the very last out. And they have. really, you know, for 23 games now, there's not been one of those where they just roll over, where it's a bunch of zeros, can't hit, can't do anything, lifeless, listless, no energy. These dudes continue to play with a ton of energy, and you're right, that has been maybe the biggest blessing of this entire season.
This is Brock and Sox Blue 88.
Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Saul.
All right, Blue 88, Brock, to finish things up here as we get ready for the draft. Let's start here. Question one. How many draft picks will the Hawks make by the time we tape next week on Tuesday? How many new Seahawks will there be via the draft?
I think the Vegas number's five. Actually, I don't know if there's a Vegas number on that or not, but that would be my... I gotta sound good, right? Howdy and Kyle, could I have fooled Salk that there really was a number out there at five? I think I could have got
sure.
You.
Sure, yeah.
My over-under would be five. I think that they're going to try to. There's a lot of strength in this draft, man. You know, the more, honestly, that I start to dig in, and I'll be on with Bob and Dave on Thursday for the first round. And first round is a traditional first round. There's probably 15, maybe 17 guys that are just different, right, that are Jared Kelnick different. Difference makers should come in and start day one or have that kind of ability. And then you got a big grouping after that, and there are a lot of 75 to 150, a lot of very good players. So I think you're going to try as desperately as you can to trade down in the second round to add in the third round. You may be able to trade from the third into the fourth and fifth. So I think my conservative number is five. And if it is six or more, then John's done a fantastic job wheeling and dealing.
Question number two. The Seahawks have, different needs, right? And then any draft is going to have its specific places where it's deeper, better, etc. How do those things match up? Based on what the Seahawks could use and based on what's good in this draft.
Very well.
What position groups do you think that we should be looking at?
Very well. So the Seahawks have made some additions, right? This offseason, Carlos Dunlap, edge rusher. This is not a great edge rushing class. They make the addition of Gabe Jackson, interior. Probably the weakest part of this draft and where it falls way off the cliff is center and guard. So two of the areas where you probably have the most concern in this draft of finding a starter, because that's still the aim and the goal. I think if you're Pete and John, even without a first, is sitting there at number 56, and how can we parlay that into more starters, and where are they? Where are those starters in the first 150 picks? Receiver is still, by and large, most pundits out there, most of the stuff that I read, most of the guys that I trust would tell you that of the top 150 players, receiver probably has the highest percentage grade-wise that are going to fall into that group. And I think this team could still be in the mix for a wide receiver. Offensive tackle. You've got some good tackles, I think, through the three rounds. It doesn't fall off the cliff like it traditionally does. And in some years past, after the first round, you're like, oh, why even draft a tackle in the second or third? It's going to be a backup. There's some offensive tackles, and I think that is a position in this scheme in particular, with Dwayne Brown going into the final year of his deal even further. I think the offensive tackle market and the defensive tackle as well. You mentioned that earlier, Salk, and yes, you make some moves, and Al Woods comes in, and you extend Puna Ford, and Monet's got a contract, but that is, to me, an area that I would love to see a difference maker. I'd love to see somebody fall in that position group into the late second or early third round and have everybody say, oh my gosh, kind of like the Ravens did last year with Justin Madubuike, a guy that I liked a lot, had a few red flags off the field, but it was an immensely talented guy, flashed in his rookie year. They're going to count on him in year number two. Those would probably be the three positions that have the most meat on the bone.
Well, that brings us then to question number three, and I mentioned him earlier, but KJ Wright, why doesn't he have a job yet?
Be 32 years old, and you put the tape on, and if you're his agent, you probably thought, man, KJ, you did enough this year. You were more productive this year than the year before, right? And the year before, you went or 2 years before that even, you had 11 tackles for loss. You did 10 passes defensed.
That's adorable. You think that the NFL cares about production? They don't care about that. Certain guys positions. Who are actually good, they don't
certain
care.
Certain positions they do.
Production,
but when
no,
you're
no.
32 and you're a linebacker in this league, it's a little bit like a running back. You better still be lightning fast. you still better be explosive. When you get into your 30s as a linebacker in this league, and this is where it's going. It started at running back, and that was kind of the first wave of it. Man, you need young running backs to start to lose your legs, too much wear and tear on the tires. I think you're starting to see that linebacker. Luke Kuechly walks away from this game. We watched Bobby last year. You realize Bobby did not have a forced fumble nor interception on the entire season? Now, yes. He's got a contract that obviously hamstrings the club and a ton of guaranteed money, and he negotiated a home run deal for him. But yeah, he's on the market, KJ is, not because of production on the stat sheet, but because you play a position where people, I think, want more than ever speed. And you play the Rams, you play the Cardinals, you play horizontal teams, the 49ers, you better have immense speed. And that is why I think KJ right now is being judged at, kind of like an older running back, man. We like you. We love you. You're still productive. We'll give you a minimum deal with some incentives, but he's looking for more.
Do you think he ends up back here?
I think that depends on the draft, right? I think that depends a little bit on this draft, and it's probably why he's not signed. Not just here, but in other places. They want to see how the draft is going to fall. It's probably the wise move if you're KJ in his camp. Let's just see how this market unfolds. Let's see how this draft unfolds. Let's see how many teams are able to address a position of need. You know, I saw someone's article the other day saying, are they doing this because they want to give extra large suit guy an opportunity to
Cody
the job? Yes.
No.
I hope not.
That doesn't seem right.
Cody Barton.
Oh, we got to get Cody Barton on the field. Boy.
He didn't flex and while the play walks right past him. Goodness gracious. What is that guy's deal? Talk about having a lack of awareness, generally speaking. I hope that guy turns the corner because, man, he is a tough watch when he's playing regularly.
Do you think the awareness came up with that suit? Was that the first red flag?
Maybe.
It's Salt called it from day one. Like bro.
This guy's completely oblivious.
The suit thing still is just so weird.
You're going to put on the 4X suit? Well, they just had the coat for me, and you just put your arms in it. But yeah, but it's a 4X coat.
When we come in here next week, Brock, are we going to be happy? Ultimately, as we kind of wrap up Blue 88 here, are we going to be happy?
Well, is Evan White going to be hitting? I guess number one.
I'm not talking about the draft.
Oh,
I don't need to hear Howdy and his Evan White. You know, and Howdy. The only reason the whole Evan White thing has happened is so Howdy can erase the Mike Zanino memories. He's trying to go on the opposite side of it this time.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
The Rays are looking great with Mike Zanino.
You mean? Has Mike Zanino done anything to help the Rays?
Are we going to be happy? Awesome. Of course we are. Salk, what did you say at the start of this thing an hour and a half ago?
Hope.
And it provides hope now. If the 49ers get Justin Fields, maybe I, for one, will think that'll be a little bit of a difficult matchup over the years. But we shall see. Yes, regardless, on Tuesday, there will be a little bit of hope. I'm kind of excited to hear Pete and John for the first time speak, in, I think, for Schneider in a year. And they're going to do that after we get done taping this day before the draft, and we'll get to react to that. So, yes, next Tuesday, we will have a lot of fun. I think we will be happy, and we will certainly be feeling that hope that always comes around this time.
Let me ask you an important question. By the way, Mike Zanino's hitting 200, in case you're wondering.
Has a 791 ops.
Yeah, he's hitting pretty well. Yeah, I see that. Who's nicer? Who is nicer? Mike Zanino or Jake Locker?
Mike Zanino is much nicer.
Wait, absolutely, it's Mike Zanino.
You sure?
No.
Then Jake Locker?
Jake Locker's super nice, though.
Do you know how nice Jake Locker is? He's so nice.
Hold on, what did you say Zanino's OPS is?
791.
Yeah.
He's hitting 200, right, which is 50 points better than any Mariners catcher right
now. He'd be right there. Ty France, 942. Mitchie, 854. And Zanino would be third on the Mariners.
All right, boys, that's going to do it for us. That's gonna wrap it up for this one. Note. I guess we got to go. Time
to
go.
You mean you got to go?
Enjoy the draft this weekend. Enjoy the Mariners, and we will be back with you guys next week. Until then,
barn.
See everybody.
Get to the chopper!